Introduction. You might have heard or read the adage that this world is not true. It is illusory. You might or you must have also heard or read that pain, physical as well as emotional, is true. Yet suffering is optional. In bringing these two facts together, if we accept them completely, we can extrapolate that if this world is illusory, then of course suffering is illusory as well. We need to let go of our preconceived ideas and concepts in our mind to know of our true and full potential. When we invoke the courage to let go of the concepts imposed by our own minds, something special happens, slowly but surely. Over a period of time, we get to know how to become aware of the intricacies of the mind, and our identification with it reduces. The suffering of the mind dissipates. We become more aware until we find ourselves at complete peace, also described as bliss in various spiritual and religious textbooks. Let there be peace for one and everyone. With this prayer, let us begin on our journey together. For the therapist so inclined to think, and the person suffering from a mental illness, who acknowledges that peace is indeed possible, this book will provide practical suggestions on how to achieve this using a cognitive non-duality therapy framework. This book has liberally dipped into the concepts of Vedanta, the essence of Sanatana Dharma, or better known as Hindu religion. This book is an offering in gratitude to the ancient teachers who expounded Vedanta and the innumerable extensive commentaries by learned saints who helped turn the knowledge of Vedanta into practical snippets to enhance our wisdom. This book is written as an explorative guide. It incorporates ancient Vedanta knowledge with modern cognitive behavior therapy. For both the therapist and the patient, suggestions are offered in a guided format for each therapy session for the most common mental illnesses. While each patient was offered individualized homework sessions, it is left to the reader to devise their own reflective work based on what the session brings up. A list of possible homework ideas are listed at the end of the book. This book has been divided into two sections. The first section describes the knowledge basis of cognitive non-duality therapy, that is Vedanta. The second section describes case examples of applications of this knowledge in individual clients. And then I leave the first paragraph. We move on. That this book should be considered as a primer for someone who wishes to develop an understanding of Vedanta. For the more experienced reader, or for a person who wishes for a more in-depth study of the science of Vedanta, please do read the suggested reading list at the end of this book. However, just reading this book or the suggested reading list might not be enough. Rather, it could be dangerous. We could make our own ideas or concepts, which are not the full truth. Having a guide, a mentor, or a teacher to help us understand these concepts is vital to help us understand the import of the knowledge provided. So just to further expand on the introduction, when the idea for this book arose, I had already experienced quite a lot of changes in the way I was interacting with my clients, with my patients in the clinic. And it was obvious that my attitude towards people with mental illness was changing. I could identify myself as someone who's suffering. Suffering with the sorrow of just being here on this planet. That was just after the first book, which was written in 2016. When the second book started to develop in the idea format, it became very obvious to me that I had to go more deeper into the knowledge which I had read superficially of Vedanta, which I keep describing again and again. Vedanta means that there is only one spirit which has chosen to express itself in you and I. But when we use our limited senses, which are the five senses, the eyes, the ears, the skin, the tongue, and hearing, we make our own concepts based on what we see, hear, feel, touch through those five senses. And based on our own past experiences in our own memory, we keep describing the same idea in our own head. Vedanta says it clearly, whatever you are experiencing is all a lie. Hence the first paragraph. Everything that you are experiencing is beautifully described as the word Maya, which means that everything that your five senses are experiencing is limited. And because of that limitation, we continue to experience sorrow again and again. Because whenever we want to have that ice cream or that savory item which gives us some pleasure, we are left with a sense of disappointment. And that's what makes us come crave for more and more. So we read books, we try and meet new people, we try and explore some new ideas and make our own intellect completely a mess, a soup of ideas, so to speak. But we have found not the true flavor of Vedanta, which is actually beyond all these senses and what they give to us. The true idea of bliss is actually nothing. And at this stage, I would like to share what I was having a little chat with one of my clients this morning. She said to me that when I try and meditate, she has been trying to meditate for a little while, she's scared. Have any of us felt scared before going to meditation? Let's be honest. Mm-hmm. Yes. When we are scared, means we are scared of our own depth of our own mind. We think our mind is the basis of this life because that's what is gathering all the information from our senses and then putting it back into the same concepts which are in the head. So when we close our eyes and the spiritual teacher says, let go, we find it hard because our mind itself is showing, okay, this is my cocoon, this is my idea, I want to stay within this framework. But with the presence of an enlightened master, which I keep bringing up again and again, your journey to the depth of your own mind becomes much easier. So this book is more about self-reflection. So when I try and experience my mind as limited, is there something more than my mind? Am I just this body or this mind where I'm having these thoughts and feelings? Am I just those memories which I have tried to keep in my mind and try and expand upon that again and again but never find an answer? Am I just my intellect which is stuck with the same concepts again and again? Or am I beyond my ego which identifies with this body again and again? What is that beyond which this world really is? There is no answer that I can write or talk to you right now. But as we explore further in this book, hopefully with a bit of practical experiences through meditation, through breath work, and constant reflection, we might find what true is. The truth which is right in front of our eyes, and that's actually a wrong way of saying it, because it's not in front of our eyes. It is right at the level of your own heart, your own depth of the consciousness, which is sitting right there, which we typically get only during sleep. But when meditation becomes very profound and deep, there is nothing to fear, then we live in bliss. We become blissful. That's how the ancient teachers described it. And this book is an attempt to get there slowly but surely. End of podcast one. We will now begin chapter one, Conversations Between Two People, page 3. I, abbreviated as AV below, bracket close, had the opportunity to take my car in for service today. On my way out, I got into a conversation with my complimentary shuttle driver, abbreviated as MJ below. It turned out he was a retired car salesperson. He was picking up and dropping off people as a post-retirement hobby. It was obvious he liked to have a conversation with his passengers. Here is my recollection of the conversation. MJ, so what job do you do? AV, I'm a physician who works in mental health. MJ, so you're a psychiatrist? AV, yes indeed. MJ, I've always been intrigued by people having mental health problems, and my understanding of this is limited. How do you treat people with mental illness? AV, well, like any other developed country, Canada is fortunate to have mental health workers, including nurses, social workers, psychologists, psychiatrists, who offer their services for those disturbed by mental illnesses. However, most diagnoses of mental health difficulties are made in primary care, and people are sent to a specialist for further diagnostic clarification and therapies. We offer medications as well as psychotherapy, and usually in combination. However, even with these combinations, people do not always get better completely. MJ, why do people get mentally ill? AV, that is a good question. There could be various reasons, but depression, anxiety, and trauma-related symptoms are the most common presentation of a mental disorder. Most people think that depression is because of a brain imbalance in various chemicals. However, that may be just a small fraction of the actual story. We think we understand depression, anxiety, and trauma based on the information gathered during a typical history offered by the person. However, current mental health practice does not typically explore either the spiritual aspect of the presentation of symptoms or the religious beliefs of the individual. Imagine that when a person walks in, you are faced with the body of that person. The doctor usually takes care of the body well by checking the blood pressure, blood investigation, and even get a brain scan at times. But we do not really talk much about the mind, which likely is the source of all mental health difficulties. The best we can do is to try to explore the way our mind works in various patterns that maintain mental illnesses. We do try to offer different psychotherapies to try to change the way of our thinking, but that is hard work. There are long waiting lists, and such therapies are not always effective. Now, imagine if we were able to look at the reason why the mind got disturbed in the first place and then became an illness. What if a psychiatric consultation explored the reason that I, as an individual, got unwell in the first place?
Who is that I? When and how did the I, the happy, peaceful person, become depressed, anxious, or traumatized? That would be an interesting way to explore mental illness, wouldn't it? MJ: Yes, I agree. So what are you getting at? AV: What I'm trying to say is that as psychiatrists, we are left to do a lot of guesswork in trying to understand the person. While we have clear access to their body, as we can see and interact with them, we do have to work like a detective to determine what and how they think and observe for patterns in their life that have led them to arrive at a psychiatrist office. We can get a sense of how the person's mind and intellect work by taking a good history, observing the way that they talk, as well as their non-verbal communication during the clinic. A psychiatrist could also use a mood, anxiety, or trauma rating scale to assess for severity of such symptoms. But really, we do not know fully why they are feeling unwell now. I, myself, am more interested in knowing what led them to be unwell in the first place. That portion of the iceberg which is hidden can be considered as, quote unquote, a conditioning, which makes all of us think the way we do, act the way we do, and respond in certain ways. Let me give you an example. When I start a conversation with people, I could ask them what sort of pizza they like the most. Someone might like pepperoni, while other a vegetarian, while the next person a Hawaiian. We all have our preferences. Have you ever thought, why do we have these preferences? Where do these likes and dislikes come from? MJ: I don't know. Maybe you can tell me. What I do know is that only a few people are interested in asking these sort of questions. By now, doctor, you will have sensed that I'm very interested in these sorts of questions. But when I start talking the way you are talking, most people just shut up, as if they don't know what I'm talking about, and offer me a glazed look. I want you to know that I'm getting very excited talking to you. AV: Well, that is very good. This sort of questioning is not for everyone. I try to gauge that during my first consultation. I can see that you want to know more. You're inquisitive and you're a listener too. Perfect qualities needed for someone to really find out what this iceberg phenomenon is. Why is there an iceberg in the first place? Who is asking these questions? Let us explore that a bit more. If you look closely at this life that we all live, we spend most of our time trying to go toward and attain what we feel attracted to, things that we desire or like. Or we make efforts to stay away and avoid things or people that we dislike. Perhaps we can talk more about this by an example. So, you were a car salesperson, weren't you? Tell me more about your job. Did you enjoy it? MJ: Well, I would sell a car, and every time, even after I'd made a good deal, I would sometimes strangely feel a bit empty, as if I had not really accomplished much. AV: Okay, and then what would you do? MJ: I would usually try to find something else to make me feel happy again. AV: Let me guess. Having a good drink, a good meal, watching TV, trying to spend time with your family, having sex, correct? Yes, so what is your point? AV: Well, my point is that we try to find happiness in the things that we are used to. Let us go back to the example of the pizza that you like. If you are hungry, you will go online to find your favorite store, you will order it, pay for it, eat it, and then hope that you will find some happiness in this process. Well, you know what happens next? The pizza is digested, your happiness fades away, and you are looking for the next thing you need to feel happy. We do not realize that it is only the hidden portion of us that continues to push us to act in this world to try to find happiness. When we get the next best thing that our senses want and our mind desires, we are left to be in the same place where we started. It is as if we are playing a constant game to try and find the perpetual happiness in something external to us. And enough is never enough. True happiness, if there is such a thing, perhaps can be found by the knowledge of the source of our likes and dislikes, and then going beyond it. Perhaps only then would we be able to get control over them and our mind. Maybe there is an inner source that guides the mind, the body, and the intellect to act in the way it does. That itself is the divine principle within us. Some people call it God, others Allah or Jesus or Shiva or other names of the divine. Yes, we have been told that this principle is in us. We just don't believe it. The only reason is because we get lost repeatedly in this world of the senses. In the barrage from the media, the information that is available to us via TV, social media, gossip, and the food that we eat. The divine is simpler, much subtler than that. It is here, right now. We just have to tune in. We have to be silent to tune in to the awareness principle, and that awareness itself is the divine. For the sake of our talk, we can try to imagine that you are that awareness principle that guides all our thinking processes. That awareness is like the ocean, much bigger than the iceberg that we talked about. If you start thinking that you are the ocean of awareness itself, and that you are only doing your job in this world as a witness, then nothing will touch you, ever. You will no longer be the conditioning, which is like the hidden portion of the iceberg, which forces you to have the likes and dislikes that you have been swayed in life so much so far. By this knowledge alone, you get more awareness, and you are then quickly out of the conditioning that maintains your likes and dislikes. As soon as you tune into that awareness, you will know that you are existence itself, and you will find true peace and quietude. Then no likes and dislikes can affect you. In fact, you then know that your true nature is that of the divine. MJ, wow, that is a lot. I need to think more about what you have just said. I see that you are now at your destination. Have a good day. I might come to pick you up in the evening. Yes, you might. Let us see what happens. Have a good day. End of chapter 1, page 8. Have a little bit of me describing what this chapter really tries to signify. Then we'll stop the recording and continue with our discussions. We are all in this life. We are in this life fixed with ideas and concepts that we have accumulated over a period of time based on our own experiences, starting from being a young child to becoming an adult. We have experienced so much every day that we get up out of our bed. We experience life as if it's life alone. We get bored by it. That's our problem. We think we need to do something new to become fully aware, to become like that child, that innocent child that we grew up with. So what have we become now? We have become a slave to our own senses. Typically, as I was trying to share in this story, we go from one sense idea to another, one sensual experience to another. When I say sensual, it's not just sex. I'm talking about all the other four organs of sensation. So be it taste, seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, any of those senses. And there are only these five senses which keep pulling us out again and again, again and again into this world. There is nothing wrong with this world. It's just the way the senses have been made that you look outwards. We as a body and mind have been made to enjoy this world. But during this process, if we do not apply our intellect, our own thinking to recognize that I am doing that same stupid mistake again and again, that I am seeking more and more things that I like, I will try and keep finding the things that I like. And then what happens? We get the things that we like. We feel a little bit of relief of the anguish of not having our desires fulfilled. We consume it, or we have any of those four senses finished. And then we are left with a sense of emptiness. Isn't that true? As if we feel we wanted something from that pizza that we ate, as we gave that example. And after it's over, what next pops into our head? What can I do next? So you start planning that vacation. We start planning that outing. We start making plans in the future. That's the key word. We are looking for something in the future. Keep forgetting that right now is so poignant, so deep and vast with all possibilities, that when we get centered, when we start looking inwards again, then our mind is settled. Only then we start finding that connection with the divine. This has been experienced by millions of people. You can too. All we have to do is acknowledge, just acknowledge. When you acknowledge, you become aware that you are beyond your own body, your own mind, your own senses. Something deep in you is experiencing the changing world. And by definition, if you're experiencing something which is changing, you need to have something which is changeless within you. And that is the spirit. The spirit never changes. The spirit never dies. It is the constant experiencer within us. That's one part of the story. The other part is, you are changing too. We cannot deny that. You are experiencing change happening, and you are changing, your body is changing. That's another part of the same truth. So I've given two truths which are somewhat contradictory. One truth says that you are changeless to experience the change. Yet, you have to be part of the changing too. Do you see the dichotomy there? Both are true. The changing is also the fun of life. So experience life fully, but remaining centered deep in our mind to a point where we accept all experiences and go beyond our own likes that we like to experience, and not run away from things that we think we dislike. So somebody gives a Hawaiian pizza to us even though we like pepperoni, and we have no choice but to accept it. We accept it fully rather than try and say, no, I don't like it. Then we are maintaining our dislike. Only then, with that awareness, then we are able to say no, but in a compassionate manner. Not assertiveness, or not having our ego say, I don't want it. Don't you think about me? Don't you care about what I eat? and so on and so forth. We can say certain things which can be hurtful for others. That purity of awareness, that knowledge which resides in awareness alone, is the basis of the spiritual path. When we start meditating regularly, start doing Kriya regularly, and listening to this wisdom again and again, again and again, and reflecting on it, what am I doing? How am I approaching my own life every day? Then we are able to slowly start tuning in. I use that word particularly for a reason. You just have to tune into that awareness, which is the basis of why we are all alive. And that same spirit is with us right here, right now. You don't have to look anywhere, not in any TV program or that book. Actually, you just got to tune in. And meditation and contemplation of this knowledge is the quickest way to get there. Jai Gurudev. Have a good evening. I will close the discussion now.